I'm conscious that there's a similar parallel conversation that goes on in the financial market between the ultimate extremes. The poll, Chris, that you mentioned earlier, of day traders, people who are buying and selling almost minute by minute to try and take advantage of a tiny movement in the market, versus the likes of Warren Buffett at the other end of the poll, at the other poll, who takes massively long-term, possibly the longest-term view of investments that anyone does in the market, and, you know, has done rather well as a result of it. But they do so by not tracking. They're very aware, Warren Buffett and his team, very aware of the markets, but they're not tracking it on a minute-by-minute basis. They ignore that.
Yeah, John, I mean, I think that's a wonderful example. I mean, you have people that are living and breathing and coming up with all these algorithms and technical analysis and, quote-unquote, they're investing. Whereas you get someone like Warren Buffett, who's investing for the long term, taking significant positions based on, you know, really in-depth analysis, and then, you know, look at the numbers speak for themselves. And, yes, his, you know, individual investments may go up or down, or he may have a tough year, especially a big part of his portfolio is with insurance, and they may have a tough year due to, you know, natural events. But over time, that overall portfolio is performing well. And he doesn't say, oh, I should get out of the insurance business this year.
Right. But notice one thing about this comparison between the two. There's nothing wrong with the day trader approach. It's just putting it in context, recognizing that what that person is doing is they are consciously making short-term investments. They're not looking long-term. The problem is when you mix the two, and we see that on the quarterly reaction on Wall Street to companies, which then puts companies in a fear cycle of, well, I can't invest in my business because I don't want to upset the street next month. So neither is right or wrong. It's just that's their strategy, that's their approach, and they need to put the numbers in context. Up and down is fine if you're in the arbitrage business. Up and down is irrelevant if you're in the long-term business.
Okay, very well said. But so, Paul, would you have any sympathy with a thought experiment which says because there's so that the danger is that managers in businesses react to the squiggly line, is there any merit in actually tracking less, doing it once a quarter, not once a month, doing it half yearly, not twice yearly, because then there's either a significant movement or there isn't, and people get less focused on the tiny minute movement? Is there any merit in going the opposite direction?
Well, so I think it's important to not ignore the squiggly line at all. I mean, I think you need to be aware of it and factor it in, because business is all about course corrections, and even minor course corrections are relevant. But getting caught up in that is losing track of what's important. The best metaphor is sailing. You're making constant course corrections, and yet what's important is whether you're heading due north if that's your goal. So it's okay to man that tiller, make those course corrections as you go. If you're a product manager, if you're in sales, if you're in business development, if you're in M&A, you need to look and see what's happening on a day-to-day basis. You can't ignore it, but recognize that as you make your decisions on a day-to-day basis, it's within the context of your longer-term goal, and don't lose that.
Great. So let's get to the fourth question. What surprised you? That's your fourth question. But what has surprised, or what continues to surprise you in the world of market research, perhaps? You know, if we were exploring this as the category, as the industry, what still surprises both of you?
Absolutely. So I would say the three things that surprised me in market research today, and being both a buyer and user of it, is one, people still, when I get analysis reports, they still do not put data in context. And I know this is fundamental, but they will provide a number, give me a statistic, but they will not tell me how that's changed over time, how, what does it mean to our absolute position, what does that mean to our competitive gap. And everything is always relative to something else. And that, I have to ask that for more often than not than I care to think about. So, one, continue to put information in context. Number two, the other thing that surprises me is data is the main character, and it's not the supporting character. While we all know, you know, we receive the 100-page decks, and people, you know, joke around, wake me when the data is over, that continues to occur over and over. And people, you know, get tied up in building slides and building decks that it is, they should really focus their time and effort in what I'm looking for are those two or three surprising findings that they did not expect. If someone came and said, this is what we found out, and, you know, we can understand this, but we don't understand, you know, these three items, that would be a rich discussion, and it would also be a refreshing discussion. So tell me what you understand, and more importantly, what you don't understand, and what your hypotheses are from the research.
Well, you told a great story when we were together in Chicago, you know, about an experience at Microsoft where you had some data on, I think it was a customer satisfaction program that just looked really odd. You know, it was significantly higher, better, in rather unconnected regions. And it was almost like, well, is that just an outlier? Is that an aberration? Or is it a real pattern?
Right. And it's something that I discounted. So, you know, we were doing research, and it was in the U.S., and I about 47 different districts in the U.S. 41 of them looked as we expected. You know, everything went up 2 points or went down 2 points. We were, you know, embracing the squiggly line. But there were about 6 different districts, and they were scattered throughout the country that when I looked at the research and preparing the presentation, I discounted. They weren't connected. They looked very different than the other 41. So I set it on the side. And the GM, to his credit, at the end, he's like, is there anything that you just didn't understand, didn't, you know, sit right with you? And I told him about these 6, and he leaned over to his chief of staff, and he's like, could you provide me with a list of where we ran that pilot? And one for one, they were running a pilot around technical support and providing on-site technical support. One for one, it matched up to those 6 districts, where there are these unexplainable, or as we would call in market research, outliers that I set on the side. And he purposely tested them around the country because he didn't want to have any kind of regional, you know, bias. And I set it on the side. And if it was not for that, tell me what surprised you, tell me what you didn't understand, help me, you know, let's have a discussion. That then led to validating that pilot program, which has now become a standard support offering for the company.
And that, it goes back to your fact-based research partner, you know, smarter than, you know, a partner smarter than you, people who are curious, naturally curious, and won't let those things go, rather than just smoothing over and ignoring them.
Right. And when I say smarter than me, I'm not looking for that research partner to come in and say, you know what, you have to expand the support program. That's not what I'm meaning by smarter. Simply highlighting this information that they uncovered, new information, and a different way to look at it, that makes me smarter.
Yeah, yeah.
The other quick thing, if I may, about what surprised you is that it opens the dialogue. It's about giving permission. How often is someone to give a presentation, and what they're presenting are the numbers that you expect to see. And so they're not letting their natural intuition, their interest, their skepticism come through to articulate, here's what I really think, here's what I really feel, here's what I'm not going to dismiss as an outlier, but I'm going to talk about because I feel that this is important. More often than not, we bury that. So by either the senior leader proactively saying what surprised you and implicitly giving permission to say what you think, or the person giving the presentation, doing the study, to say, you know what, I'm going to make this at least one chart in there that's going to say, and by the way, here are some things to consider, some things that we don't understand, but, you know, I'm not going to be penalized for telling you that there are some things here to think through further, and we can do that together. That is a game changer right there, opening that dialogue.
And in fact, I think market research firms, if someone made that part of their offering, you know what, we are going to have a, you know, it's create a safe learning environment. We're going to have a what surprised you session, or we're going to call it food for thought, and then let's kick it around. I mean, it could be a very juicy session, as one might say, John.
Yeah. I do. I think that's when people engage in it. Rather than pretend to have all the answers, it's great, interesting thoughts, good, better questions that come out of, you know, the original questions. And I guess your fifth question starts to touch on that, doesn't it? Because what does the lighthouse reveal is your fifth question. Where are the rocks? Where can we even build a new lighthouse to illuminate the way? Because there's no such thing as perfect knowledge, perfect data. As they sort of say in the military, you know, the fog of war, you know, you have to go with putting things together which are never quite that clear. And you talked about triangulation and making sure you've got a real fix on where you are and where the big rocks, you know, in the way are. But do you want to just say a little bit more about what does the lighthouse reveal?
Sure. If people truly understand the value of research, the value of analytics, and this just doesn't have to be a survey. When we talk in the book, it could be any level of information. Someone is coming to the table and they're bringing information that is streaming at us today. It is not, you know, it is not going to provide the answer. And everyone feels that they need to provide the answer. And what effective analysis does is it narrows down all those potential dimensions that could impact your decision to say, of the 65 things you care about, these are the 5 things that really matter. And I could tell you with a high degree of confidence, these 60 things should be off your radar. You then layer in your business acumen, your intuition, your experience, and focus on those 5 items. And that's just, you know, similar to the role of a lighthouse. A lighthouse highlights the 5, you know, obstacles, main rocks that you need to navigate around. Once you know those, just as a captain, you know, who could be plying those same waters every day, you know, she is aware of where those rocks are and the lighthouse is shining on them. But then every day she's bringing in, okay, what are the tides? What are the winds? What's the local weather? So those two things come together nicely. And I think this analogy that effective research is a lighthouse, if people actually started to embrace it, and not feel like, well, what's the answer? Tell me which way I should go. What's the decision I should make? I think that's where it really starts to fragment, as opposed to these are the 5 things. If you actually focus on them and consider them, not necessarily act on them, but at least you consider them in your decision making, you will be smarter about your decision, more informed, and more confident.
The other side of the lighthouse is the end result. So once that path through the waters are known, you need to create an example from it. So the lighthouse metaphor, it's a shining example, not in an abstract way of, well, we think we can do that, but, you know, there's the model. That's what you should do. This is what you can aspire to. So market research will point the direction. You navigate that path, but then your teams need to understand, now what do I go do repeatedly? So the lighthouse is that shining example.
Terrific. Your six is, who are the swing voters? And I really like this concept, you know, because it has been fashionable in the last few years to focus on the lead consumers, on the passionate consumers, the ones which are all in the top box. And that had a certain seductiveness to it. But if I understand it right, your advice is, in whatever the challenges, in whatever category, it's those that are really in the middle, to go back to the political analogy again, which is where the term comes from. it's those that decide the election, or the voters that decide the election aren't sure. They're the ones who are, you know, not completely negative, and they're not yet passionate advocates. And your advice is, I think, if I understood it, is to, you know, seek that middle ground, the swing voters, and think how you can, you know, nudge, influence, persuade them, you know, into being advocates.
I think this chapter, Who is Your Swing Voter, is one of the most powerful chapters. And in fact, you know, we could spend a whole nother hour just on this.
Come on, let's do it. Let's break the rules.
Come on. Yeah, we got the time is going. But very quickly, you know, if people want to grow their business, if they want to drive their overall, whatever their key metric is, satisfaction, net promoter, advocacy, loyalty, awareness, this concept around swing voter, people have to embrace it. And then it's also very practical. There are steps in this chapter on actually how to identify your swing voters. And these are the folks that, you know, are what we call, you know, the neutrals. These are the folks in the middle, the gray bar, that we tend to discount. And, you know, you worry about the people that are very satisfied to you or, you know, dissatisfied to you, and how do we recover them, and how do we keep the people that are loving from us, build for them. They're folks that are buying from you that, you know, on the survey, you know, they're giving you the sixes and sevens. They're leaning positive. If you knew the one or two things that they are look different than everyone else and they're very satisfied, and just address those one or two points, imagine if you took, you know, part of that gray bar and quickly shifted them into the top part, into repeat customers that recommend. What that would do for your overall sales, without investing much dollars in new products and new services, it could be around, you know, those experiences. And this swing voter concept, we ripped a page, you know, from the political landscape, and applying it in a new, fresh way to marketing, to decision making, and to business.
And your final question, which is a great one, it's three questions in one. You cheated, really. I think that's in the best tradition, isn't it, really?
We like to think of it as a value add.
The three W's, the what, the so what, and the now what. And I think if, you know, almost to do a little, you know, summary of where we've been, the what, in market research terms, is a lot of the questions I know you put at the front. You know, how often do you leave a meeting with more questions than answers? How often do you feel that pre-existing beliefs have affected the way data is interpreted? How often, you know, do people spend more time presenting the data than they do discussing it? You know, the issues and the problems that you've highlighted with the way that data is used is a big, you know, issue. The so what is because it doesn't make businesses smarter, from what you've been saying. People can lose the wood for the trees. They can be literally, they can be all consumed, swept away by the flood of data rather than actually be able to do anything with it. And perhaps I can ask both of you for the last word on the now what. You know, what do you feel is the now what? Now that you've, you know, this is known, hopefully people will, you know, will read this and enjoy it. Now what?
Right. So there's a great quote by Winston Churchill that says, this is not the end, not even the beginning of the end, but it is perhaps the end of the beginning. And that's, you know, kind of a fundamental flaw as we go through these work streams. And here's the what, and maybe you get to the so what. So you've found the data that matters, and you might ask yourself what that data really means, but have you created an action plan based on that meaning? That is the now what. So another metaphor that Chris and I like to use is that of a movie director. When someone films a movie, there are hundreds of hours filmed, and yet there's maybe 120 minutes on screen. So you have to be ruthless to cut through the data, focus on the business issues, but then say, what is actionable from this? What is meaningful? And how do I take what I just learned or what I just inferred and put real plans around that? Now what? And so this is all, again, about the partnership and the trust between the market research side and the business leader, the business line side, that has to go do something with this. Because this also feeds an iterative process where you might go through part of the cycle again. Now what? Now let's dive back into the data a different way. Now what? Now let's launch this initiative. There are a lot of paths forward, but how many times do we sit in these meetings and there's this data dump and then, okay, well, see you at the next meeting. Well, that's wrong. You need to have that actionable plan.
And I'll just end with a coda around the now what, and I think it's one of our favorite quotes, and it helps us, again, to think about research a bit differently, is, research is to see what everyone else has seen and to think what no one else has thought. So the now what is to take that same information that's in front of you and ask the questions, because questions are the most powerful instrument in your toolbox that will enable you to make that decision and to interrogate the data and get the new learning to move forward. So how do you take that information that's the same thing everyone else is looking at, but just turn it somewhat to say, okay, now what does that mean? Where do we go with it? And so what? Is that a meaningful change? And how can we actually take action on that? And I think, that is, at the end of the day, what it is all about.
Paul, Chris, thank you. I hope that everyone who's listened in has enjoyed it as much as I have. It is a great book, as I reckon you've gathered by now, and I think a really useful one for anyone in business and particularly market research. Thanks for your time, and look, I wish you luck with all the presentations, which no doubt you're going to be asked to do. So many thanks for chatting to us this afternoon.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Take care.